In this episode of the Aren't Size Podcast, I've got Cece and Ryan in the studio. This is going to be Ryan's first Q&A episode. So we go through the questions you asked, we get them answered. We talk fitness, we talk health, we talk nutrition. Sit back, enjoy this episode. By the way, just wanted to remind you, all these episodes are brought to you by Red Dot Fitness Training Products and Programs. You can find out more about those by going to rdftrainonline.com. Our most popular programs exist on rdfprograms.com. That's where you're going to find RDF Max, RDF Strong, and Fuel U. Those are our signature programs that you can get delivered straight to your inbox today by going to rdfprograms.com. When you get there, you'll get 25% all those programs when you move forward. So again, go to rdfprograms.com. Welcome to Iron Sights. This podcast candidly seeks to create opportunities and deliver impact by sharing the experiences and wisdom of successful entrepreneurs and thought leaders who unapologetically aim to win in health, fitness, business, and life. I'm your host, Scott Howell. Welcome to Old School Meets New School. Tradition meets innovation, and imperfection meets excellence. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
My hip flexor muscles feel very tight, and I've been stretching them 4 to 5 days per week for months. Initially, it seemed to help them feel less tight, but after that, I can't seem to make any progress. Any suggestions?
Hip flexors. Anybody else have tight hip flexors?
I can get tight hip flexors.
Same.
Yeah. Especially if I'm sitting a lot.
It's interesting. I had for, it was well over a year. It was about a year and a half. I was doing a bunch of traveling on the road for work. Sorry. So that was what the travel was. It was a lot of airplanes, a lot of rental cars and whatnot. And I was also trying to continue to train for multi-sport. So I was running a lot, riding a lot, and swimming a lot. And man, I get off that airplane after riding 5 hours from the West Coast to the East Coast or whatever else, and I would be wrecked. And, you know, it's just, God, my hip flexors are so tight. And it was one side way more than the other.
Yeah, that's
common. Yeah. And I felt it like working out, and I felt it when I was done working out, and I felt it when I was getting off the airplane and everything. And also my low back was bothering me, right? And you can kind of put the two and two together there a little bit, but also sitting for that long is never good.
Yeah.
But, you know, every time I went to the gym, right, every time I worked out, I started with some type of warm up that would include at the time some self-myofascial release stuff. For a little while, I was on a, I'd be on a, like just a foam roller to just kind of get to shut it down a little bit because it was so pissed off. And I stepped that up to like a kettlebell and a kettlebell handle, right? Laying across the kettlebell, like a smaller, like 16 kilo, like Russian kettlebell. And then it just to try to get it to shut down. And this went on forever. And then I would stretch, you know, tons of stretch work, right? To try and get it to loosen up. And it never got better.
Yeah.
It just never got better. I get like some temporary relief sometimes. I could never really put my finger on like what was working. So I was just kind of throwing the whole medicine cabinet or kitchen sink at it, if you will. Medicine cabinet, kitchen sink at it to try and get it to work. But turns out it had nothing to do with how tight my hip flexors were or weren't. But that was my experience with like, my hips are tight. My hip flexors must be tight, right? Like I feel tight in the front of my pelvis and those and all the time. And so I must need to stretch more. So I can relate to this one a little bit.
So, I mean, you just kind of mentioned it. I think a lot of people blame the hip flexor for the position of the pelvis or the tension they're feeling. But I think a lot more importance is what's the position of the pelvis in your exercise, in your daily life, things like that. And that causes that sensation of feeling tight. So I find a lot of times, you know, you can stretch the tissue to create length or kind of that same thought of like in an inhibitory effect. But when you try to actually work on inhibiting the tissue through other exercises that pull you into, generally we see like an anterior tilt.
Yeah, hips are tilted forward.
Hips are tilted forward, literally like the front of your, like think of that butt sticking out kind of Instagram girl kind of thing. So when we get out of that, it's not necessarily that stretching the hip flexors will fix that, but inhibiting the hip flexors by doing things that put you in a posterior tilt, strengthen the muscles opposing to it, and doing that repetitively, and then fixing the position of the pelvis and awareness in a lot of your exercises as well. That's the thing that'll fix it more long-term. So stretching might be a part of it, but that's not the fix.
Yeah, it's just, that's where people go though. Like tight stretch. If it's tight, stretch it, right? And I've always you know, just kind of ridden this line where, look, if you have tightness, then you're going to have weakness, mm-hmm. right? The tightness is generally a side effect or a compensatory thing to being weak somewhere else. And I think that's what you're getting at there. Yes. And that, you know, we're spending a ton of time trying to pull muscles apart and trying to lengthen or remodel tissue, which is not likely going to happen. It can help with the strengthening on the other side, the reciprocal muscles, so that those things ultimately get maybe pulled more into a position that they should be. Let's just say that length tension relationship changes so they don't feel as tight.
Yeah.
But this is generally a weakness issue.
Yes.
Weakness, or it's a repetitive overuse motion. So mm-hmm. I can say that, you know, depending on hip flexor, are we talking about the quadricep muscle that crosses?
We don't know. Just
that's my
hips.
Question. Yeah. So yeah. Like, when is it palpable? Can you feel it? So when you go to touch your hip, you know, at the front, is it your rectus femoris that attaches to the pelvis, or is it deeper inside where we're talking about more psoas, more like a trunk? So, you know, for individuals, I can tell you having tight hip flexor feeling, or it being just achy, thinking that it was tight, but it was, for me, it was repetitive overuse mm-hmm. for constantly on my bicycle miles and miles, you know, time and time again, and then going to bed, sleeping on my side with my knees tucked, my hips bent and stuff like that. And then in the morning, oh my God, it felt so tight.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of it was weakness or just overuse. And then also, needing to work on my glute strength more.
It's a little bit like shoulders, and that trying to identify exactly what it is. Much easier, exactly. I think, to identify with the pelvis than it is with the shoulders in a lot of ways. But to your point, I was just talking to our friend Mark, who was just mm-hmm. here this morning, who, you know, he was going, man, you know, I've got this tight hip issue. And he goes, man, it feels like, and this is in Mark's from mm-hmm. South Carolina, and he's got about the most Southern accent. And he says, man, it's way deep, like it's way up in there in my hip,
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. And I like almost in my back, you know, kind of thing. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like psoas.
Yes. Right?
So we're getting back more into there. And then I said, does it ever bother you back? No, he goes, my back's fine. Like, that's not really bothering me. But he goes, man, when this thing lights up, it is just like deep, like
yeah,
in my guts kind of thing. Okay. Well, that could be more of an indication that it is your hip flexor, like from the psoas perspective, but that's not the only hip flexor. Good. Yes. To your point, the rectus femoris is also a hip flexor. It's part of your quadricep. So that could be kind of what's tight. So where are you kind of feeling that? And the people listening to the show, they're like, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Like, I just know my hips feel really tight. But I think where we were getting with that was like, how do we overcome this? What are the tips? Well, one is stretching might not be the answer for you. And I can tell you, going back to my story, no amount of stretching or strengthening would have changed the situation that I had. Because it got to a point where I actually went in and had a x-rays and an MRI done. And I ended up having a CT done as well of that whole area, like a dyed CT, to see what was going on in there. And turns out I have an orthopedic issue. And that is, the head of my femur is too large for the socket that it sits in. And and so what you end up getting is an impingement. And so it's called FAI for anybody that's had it. It's been more recognized now probably in the last few years. But when I went through all this, which was about 15 years ago, it was kind of new. The Swiss were just kind of figuring all this out. And they're like, hey, this is an issue and it happens in a lot of people. But no amount of stretching I was going to do is going to fix that problem. So there were very invasive surgical ways around this, or there's just, you got to get used to it and understand what you got and try to manage it the best you can, which is what I decided. And I was able to do that to a certain extent. But one of those things was not pissing off the musculature around there by constantly tugging on it and stretching.
Yes.
I stopped that shit immediately and started to strengthen the hip as a whole.
Yeah.
More specifically, my extensors, my external and internal rotators, to be able to handle the movement in that hip and maybe take a little bit of stress off where that was happening at the, you know, in those bony impingements. So say all that to say, just because you have tight hips doesn't necessarily mean you have tight hip flexors. And if it is a hip flexor tightness, how do we go about doing it? So that's a long way to get to the question, which is, hey, what tips do you have?
So I think that's a good understanding. And I think we've talked about this a little bit. If you're not working with a professional, you need to kind of test the waters a little bit to see what you respond to. But you need to not just keep hammering your head against the same thing. If you just keep stretching it and that keeps pissing it off, maybe that's not the answer for you. So I think there's kind of three components. There could be, some people might benefit from strengthening that tissue at length. So strengthening the hip flexors at length. So exercises that pull you, whether it's resisted, into that to strengthen at length. The other aspect could be strengthening the antagonistic muscles, what you kind of talked about with glutes, hamstrings, maybe some deep core, some different things, even stuff into the pelvic floor can have an impact on it. And then what you just said, which I find a lot of times when there's something around like the hips, when we have constant feeling of tension or tightness, is because your pelvis is trying to find stability.
Yeah, it has instability.
It has instability. So it's trying to use that tissue to stabilize, but maybe it's not using those deep internal external rotators.
So big, strong muscles to call on.
Exactly. Yep. So for some people, they might respond really well to strengthening the other intrinsic musculature around the hip, like stabilizing hip muscles and the glutes, glute med, all these other like things like that, common catch with that. So strengthening the stabilizers around the pelvis, and then looking at the mechanics and movement with that.
Yeah. So you started this whole thing out with like trying to undo the position that you're staying in most of the time that's creating the issue, which is generally hip flexion, where there's a lot of knee and hip flexion and just our daily life, but also in a lot of the things we do. If you're athletic and you're moving, like you're running, you're cycling, playing softball, playing baseball, playing volleyball, whatever, surfing, you're in that athletic position. It's ankle, knee, and hip flexion where you're having to actively stabilize there. And maybe having to come out of that in like in an explosive type of movement. Jiu-jitsu, you're constant hip flexion, right? A lot of the time you're in the guard, right? And you're just there a ton. Yeah. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to strengthen the muscles that would be on the opposite side of that. So we're talking about a lot of more extension maybe in your game than the flexion that you do anyways.
Yeah.
We talk about this like with the push and pull concept. Like for every push that I do, I do two times as many pulls that I would do. This is my personal preference. This is the programming that I go through. It's a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 ratio for me because I am so like on the front side and the anterior side, I'm so dominant up there, and it creates issues for me and through my shoulder girdle, through my thoracic spine, my neck and things like that. So I make sure I'm pulling a bunch, right? Versus I do more pulling than pushing. So same thing on this concept would be do more extension work than flexion work. But you mentioned something, I want to talk about this, and that is training the hip flexors at length. So that tissue at length, what would that look like?
So as more of a regress exercise, I'll have someone supine, and some people, this might even be body weight, but literally just having them almost do like a, keeping their pelvis tucked and then literally doing like a march where their legs extending straight and then pulling, and it's just getting into a relative hip extension. And there's some gravity against that.
So you're laying on your back. Right, so your belly up, right? Yep. And you've posteriorly tilted your hips.
Yes,
so,
which is going to create more length at the hip flexors.
So you're pulling your belly button towards your rib cage. Think about that.
Yes.
So you're shortening that distance between your belly button and your rib cage. So think about that. It's like a reverse crunch.
Yes.
Right? So you're going to feel that all that kind of stuff switch on, including your glutes probably. Maybe your deep pelvic floor muscles might switch on there.
Exactly. Yep.
And then you're going to do this marching where you're picking one foot up off the ground and slowly bringing it back and vice versa.
Yes.
Or extending it way out without the heel touching and bringing it back. That is a very regressed version of this. And it's often chosen for people that are very, very weak and have no conception awareness. Awareness or connection to all the things we're talking about, or somebody that's in a deep amount of pain because they have so much instability. It's created issues around the spine or around the, the sacrum, and we've got some instability there, and it feels like or looks like physical therapy. And that's what kind of that looks like. People can kind of relate to that. So that's the regressed movement.
So then my next step, I mean, one, just like any exercise, you could start to load that with a band around the foot or something like that. But then to actually pull into more relative where the force is pulling down against the hip flexor more, the next thing I would do is start to elevate someone's back of their hips, like putting maybe even a foam roller or a ball underneath their hips, then and having some sort of apparatus like a cable or a band pulling more down. It really looks similar, but the hips are up. That'd be the next step. And then we can go standing, and then there's kind of progressions from there as well.
Yeah. So as you're getting more into this, the more traditional exercise that you'd see that would really hit a lot of this stuff would be like a single leg Romanian deadlift, right? Where we're standing up and going into full extension, right? And challenging the hip stability and mobility all at the same time, loading through the posterior chain, but also loading those, rotational stabilizers that are kind of, there's a little bit of anti-rotation going on there. And you're training that whole system versus like locking in on, I'm just going to train my glute.
Yeah.
That's stupid in my mind. Like I To me, it's a waste of time. You could be doing a ton of things all at the same time. I get if you're a bodybuilder and you're like, more gains for the glutes, you fucking do your thing.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to undo this hip flexor tightness, which is as more times than not relates to a weakness, then let's train the entire system, right? And all the constituent parts of that system at the same time, because that's how it needs to function. If that's not working for you, then maybe you start to peel it back a little bit and yes. kind of figure out like, hey, where are my issues here? And to your point, like if you need help with that, like seek some help. But I think that the point that we're trying to make that you were kind of making there at the beginning with the regression is this isn't about loading up with weights. We just quickly went from a very regressed movement to much more of a complex advanced movement. There's a lot of things in between, and there's a lot of quote unquote mobility exercises you can do, which are not stretching, right?
Yes.
But they are very focused to getting movement and movement through that hip, which will require a certain level of strength to be built and control in order to control all the different movements of that hip so that tension is being taken out of that tissue. And that's something that you do here quite frequently in our resilience conditioning sessions. Going back to our friend Mark, who's visiting from out of town, he jumped into your class the other day.
Yeah.
I saw him on that was on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. He went and shot a match on Sunday. He got up there. He's like, holy God, I feel. And by the time he showed up on Monday morning, he's like, brother, that's the only mark it's there. Man, I felt muscles I didn't even know I had. Right? He's like, the little muscles in between my, mm-hmm. My vertebrae, I can feel them, man.
Yeah.
Like they're like, so to that point there, and there were no modalities involved in that other than basically intention, gravity, and the postures or whatever you're making him get into. So this can go a lot of different directions. But I think the point is with the tips are get away from thinking that you need to pull on that tissue more.
Passively pull on it,
yeah.
Especially.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that's a good point. Like, yeah. So the stretching type things where you get down into that like sprinter's position or, what they call it?
Couch stretch.
America's greatest.
Oh, world's greatest.
Whatever the hell it is. Like, I hate that thing. I think it's the gayest thing ever. But I don't think it helps people. Mm-hmm. I don't think they know what they're supposed to be doing 90% of the time. I think it's one thing you can do. But my point of this is you can, that's pulling on that tissue, right? Yeah. And that's just pissing off likely something that's already pissed off. So mm-hmm. Anyway, long story short, maybe work on the strengthening piece, right? And think about the backside of all that, strengthen that stuff. And maybe what you're doing is sort of some light stretching to kind of gauge what that level of tightness is feeling for the day.
Yeah.
And then before and even after and kind of see how you're feeling.
Yeah.
That's one way to address it. You can also go to our Red Dot Fitness YouTube channel. There is a whole host of videos there in our mobility section on how to, attack the hip specifically in those hip flexors and extensors and rotators that are in there, internal and external. Maybe spending some time in there and learning where your weaknesses are before you're trying to load it up with weight and trying to fix everything with throwing weight at it or loads at it.
Yeah. And which most of those exercises, those are the kind of things you would see in our resilience conditioning sessions.
Same type of stuff.
Yeah. So.
Next question. I'm starting phase 4 of RDF Max and wondering why I'm not doing any of the traditional barbell power exercises like barbell cleans, barbell snatches. Can you explain?
Yeah, we got this question quite a bit up front when we started this thing. And I'll just go back to explain it real quick about what Max is. Max is specifically geared to build muscle strength and also power. Mm-hmm. So we're in within there, when we were talking about power, we're also talking about speed. Speed is a component of this. And most people trying to jump into one of these programs do not have the skill set in order to basically apply these Olympic lifts proficiently at any level whatsoever. I mean, they may have had some experience around it, but cleans, snatches, clean and jerks, that's probably one of the most complex things you can ask your body to do sort of in the gym, right?
There's a lot of technique that goes into Olympic lifting that I don't think the average individual really can appreciate unless you were to take a seminar or a class with somebody who that's all they do,
right?
That's an Olympic lifting coach. I can't remember what the exact like steps there are, I think, in a clean, but I think there somebody had broken it down to like 32 steps from the ground.
Yeah.
I think from it depends on who you talk to. Yeah.
But I mean, anyway, it's very,
there's a lot of components.
Yeah. It's very technical.
Yeah, yeah. It is very technical. And as for as long as I spent in it, you know, one of the more challenging, once you kind of master that thing, one of the things that's really challenging to do is to get somebody else to be able to do it, right? And you have had to go through that journey for a long time in order to understand all the things that somebody is, number one, doing, but also all the things that they're feeling. Because I can't tell you how I feel. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't tell you how to feel. All I can do is tell you some things, and then you're going to have to feel through those things. And when we wrote this program, we recognized right off the bat that by putting those in there, we have already limited the audience to this, the appropriate audience to this, by, let's just say, 98% of the people, right? Because I don't think there's greater than 2% of the exercise population out there that could walk into a plan for building strength and power where those types of exercises are being called for or prescribed that can do those at a proficient level that I would feel comfortable giving those to them with or giving those to them in that workout so that they somehow come out the other side a better athlete, you know, more powerful athlete. But the human body is an amazing thing. It'll figure out a way to get from point A to point Z. And I've seen a lot of things, you know, and I've done a lot of things that were probably like, not probably, I think the proof is in the pudding that my body is messed up in ways because I just went from A to Z. And then, you know, maybe QRST, you know, maybe those were missing and I wasn't very good at it, but shit, I made it up with LMNOP, you know, or whatever, you know, like I figured it out.
Yeah.
And the body will do that. And so we left those out for that reason is like, we didn't want to limit people. I don't want people to go, if I can't do a barbell clean or a barbell snatch, then I can't do this program. So that was one of the things. The other thing is that I think a lot of people that have done those things have been dependent on those things for a long time. I don't want to say that they were overprescribed or anything like that. It's just what they've been doing. There are a lot of ways to build speed, power. Well, going back to the beginning, muscle strength, speed, and power without doing Olympic lifts.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that I think was the bigger reason we were kind of going, let's give people something a little bit different. It's maybe available to more of the masses. And it takes a little bit of a different approach than all that work that gets done on or around the barbell that some people have, some people don't have, some people have the patience for, and maybe the aptitude for grasping, and some people they'll never get it.
Yeah.
They'll just never get it. So those are a couple of the reasons.
Well, and I think the limiter with those exercises, like the intent of that program is to have a training adaptation, like result, let's say, from that program. And I think a lot of people, when they're doing these really complex lifts, they're spent so much time on the technique, which, you know, they're technical. You should spend time on technique if you're trying to do those, but it starts to limit either the intent, the load, the output. And again, from that, the training effect that you're going to get from it. So maybe you have a powerful enough hip extension, whatever, through that movement to load at this load. But because you're so technical, you haven't gotten the timing with that down. You're having to use this load or intention and speed. You're missing out on gains on power.
Spending our time trying to figure out how to do it right instead of getting the benefit from the exercise.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that really is, I think, the answer to the question. So how do we get around it? Like, and so what are people seeing? You're seeing all the same components of, you know, putting a lift together like that. It's explosiveness, right? Yeah. It's intention. We're just using other movements. We're using other exercises to get the same type of movement patterns done that I think are more accessible to a lot of people. And you can do them in most garage gyms or, you know, well-equipped garage gyms, if you will, or in most conventional gyms that would not allow you to do Olympic lifting, even if you could, and are not equipped for that, right? They don't have bumpers. They don't necessarily have a platform or just an area where you can do a platform or not.
Yeah.
So again, just making it more accessible to people. I think there's another benefit here is if you've been doing a program that involves a lot of Olympic lifting in it and those three specific lifts, if we're being specific about that, it's a great way to kind of get outside of that and challenge yourself in other ways. So you're going to see a lot of explosive work, a lot of speed pulls, you know, you're going to see a ton of stuff. And that was one of the other things is it allows us because we're not spending so much time under or over the barbell, right? That we can start to give a variety, a little bit more of a variety of exercises within the volume and the density of the programming that exists there. So that's it. Look, if your goal is to be a better, you know, to be better on the platform with the clean and jerk, with the snatch, that's not the program for you.
Yeah.
It isn't. It's not. But if your goal is to build max strength and power, it's a great program. There's a lot of good ones out there, but especially if you're somebody that is sort of, I would say, intermediate to advanced, maybe never gotten into a power program before, and is not really interested in doing like Olympic lifting, or has a limitation that won't allow you to do that for whatever reason. There's a lot of reasons, not that you couldn't do some type of Olympic lift that couldn't be modified, but you know, people that have very limited shoulder mobility, strength, or overhead ability, those lifts become very problematic.
Yeah.
And so most people have some level of deficiency there that needs to be worked through before you get there. Hey, maybe this is the program that you do before you get into your Olympic lifting program. So you're kind of set up from a neuromuscular adaptation perspective, but also from a metabolic adaptation perspective, so you can handle the work. And if you, let's just say you're a really adaptive dude who picks up on new things and new skills really quickly, and the Olympic lifting is the thing that you're getting in, you want to get into, hey, the more you have, right, already downloaded onto the motherboard and within the, you know, the energy systems in order to be able to handle the work that you're going to get on top of learning the technique, the quicker you might progress. I'm not saying it's a guarantee.
Yeah.
But it might put you in a better position there. But the reasons we've said, and it doesn't take away from what you can build in terms of explosiveness, power, speed, all that stuff. It's just a different approach to it.
How long should I stay with my strength training program before I switch to something else like physique or power focused training?
Yeah, it's a great question. We get this question a lot. I think we're getting inside the head of somebody who's looking at their program going, what else should I be doing? Like, when do I move on from where I'm at? Or when do I hop programs? And I think that's probably the bigger thing. Like, how long do I stay in this strength and muscle building program before it's time for me to do power, right? Or to do endurance or something like that. And the answer to this is, it depends on your goal, obviously. But if your goal is just to be a stronger, healthier, you know, happier person, you don't ever have to leave that program.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other end of it, is stay there forever. If it's programmed correctly and structured correctly, you can keep doing that forever. There is no reason to leave there at all. And so obviously that leaves some things to talk about in the middle.
Well, and I think in the middle, I think there's probably two aspects of this. Is one is, do you feel that you have really hit a plateau, or your body's kind of rejecting that training phase? I think that's one way to go. And really with that though, like, have you given it its time? So if you did 2 weeks and you're like, all right, I'm done with this, give it a little bit longer. But if you get to that point where you're like, your numbers aren't going up, you're just feeling beat up, you're just hitting the same things over and over again, maybe even you're regressing over time, that's one aspect. But on the other aspect, if we're thinking of someone who's kind of trying to be just generally well-rounded, just generally trying to move through these different phases, trying to be able to be adept at all these different modalities, or let's say whatever modalities, that's not the correct term, but with that is maybe from there, if you're trying to thinking of trying to change things up, like if you're just feeling burnt out, if you've been powerlifting for a long time, you've been training just as a strength athlete, and you're just feeling you have no buy into it anymore, that also might be another sign to try a different style of training from there. So,
yeah, that's a really good point. I think the if I'm looking at it from inside the person's head, maybe what my approach would be like, is this person coming from like some level of anxiety or anxiousness? Like, they're not doing enough, or they're supposed to change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you don't have to do anything. Like, there's no reason for you to change. If you're happy doing that, you're getting the result that you're looking for. It's satisfying the things that you need to do. I'm not saying, you know, don't change the exercise selection, don't change the intensity, and don't change the volume, but strength training specific, like training for strength or muscle building. Is there some reason why you should come out of that? And you just mentioned a couple of those things. Again, I'm going to go back to my answer. There's no reason for you to do that unless it somehow supports your goal.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and or your goals aren't being met, and there might be a reason to come outside of it, to explore something different for a while and then jump in. Here's another thing to think about. Like, depends on, that's part of the depends is like, where are you in your journey here? If you are a, let's say a novice to even intermediate, you know, lifter, the gains that you can get by cycling back, continually cycling back through or periodizing your strength and, or muscle building and strength program, will go on for a long time. But as you get more advanced and you get to a certain point where you're starting to peak as an athlete or starting to peak in terms of how much intensity can I really load on here? How much volume can I really load on here? Then things become a lot more complex. And anybody that's telling you different than that is lying to you, because as an individual, there are very specific things that you may need to tweak and understand at a much deeper level with a coach even to help you continue to get those gains. And I'm not saying you need to change out of your program. I'm just saying the adjustments within that program, that muscle and strength building program, are going to be, they're going to get a lot more detailed and a lot, there's going to be a lot more complexity to this. You know, to ask the question, how long should I be here before I jump out? Again, that's going to be dependent on the goal. But this idea of program hopping, I think, comes up because people are like, well, what's the next great, you know, the next best thing? One of the litmuses to this on when should I, like, if your shit's working, then if you're getting gains, if you're building muscle,
if it's not broken, don't fix it.
And you're building strength, like, don't be so anxious to drop that and walk away from it. Walk away from it. So again, like if you're measuring, you're kind of tracking, then you can manage this a little bit differently. But again, like if it's working, why would you want to come out of it? That would be my question. Because that answer then dictates a lot of different things. Like, well, I want to be, you know, I want to be faster. Or I want to, you know, there's a physique thing here, you know, goal or whatever else. Well, then in that case, you're probably still going to be doing the same type of stuff. We just may need to make some minor tweaks. So the emphasis will change based on your goal.
So when you were talking about, just for the listener, when you were talking about the complexity of the things that might change in your strength training program, are you talking about the volume? So maybe doing eights versus up to like 15s or 20s? Are you talking about doing tempos outside of changing the exercise?
I mean, I think that's a component that we can't.
Is that what you're talking about?
One more time.
So you were talking about not having to change your strength training program. It's more about some of the complexities in there. So are you talking about
controlling some variables?
Yes. The variables.
So I'm not. So what I'm saying is I'm looking at the larger picture of building muscle and strength, right? You don't ever have to go move away from that.
Yeah.
You can do that for the rest of your life if that's what your little heart wants. But in order to continue to make gains, if you will, and progress and see a positive result, likely that is a continued progress and minimize the negative, you know, return on investment that you may get at times, you know, then yes, the variables are going to have to be changed, but the goal, right, and the intention of what you're trying to get accomplished there doesn't need to change. You could keep doing that forever. Don't think that you have to go like, well, I guess it's time for me to go do jiu-jitsu now. Like, oh, that's what everybody says. Like, that's what you have to do. Or I guess it's time for me to be doing some speed and power work. You never have to do that if you don't want. I think there'll be a time where you might want to try that. You might want to express all that muscle and strength that you built, you know, along the way. But damn, I mean, I see a lot of physique and bodybuilder guys that have no fucking desire to do that. All they want to do is just get bigger. Dude, those guys don't even get competitive until they've been at it for a decade.
Yeah.
Right. You're not even like, you might be able to go quote unquote compete, right, and walk away with a medal or a trophy or something. But the guys that are competing like at a professional or semi-professional level, getting paid, right, getting endorsements, making money on this at any level whatsoever, those guys have been at it for a long, long time. And they didn't program hop. Well, maybe they did, but they've really figured out what works for them. And then again, those intricate variable adjustments that they know work for best for them were figured out along the way.
Yeah.
And they're not trying to walk away from those. They're not trying to figure something else out. So stay patient, stay consistent. You will get way more out of the consistency than you'll ever get out of, you know, hopping from one thing to the next. Just pick the thing that you're going to do and stick to it. And when it stops working, you might only need to just adjust this dial over here a little bit to continue the progress forward.
Yes.
But, and you should expect that to happen the longer and the more consistent you're in it.
I've been training consistently for nearly 7 years. I take my training, nutrition, and recovery very seriously, and I'm currently the strongest and fittest I've ever been. I've reached a point where making the big jumps in muscle and strength have really slowed down, and I'm frustrated. What tips do you have for how to jumpstart that process again? or should I just get used to this?
This actually comes off, I think, the last question a little bit. It's kind of, it's a very similar type answer. As you get, I think the big overview statement is the more advanced you get, the longer you've been in this game, the more awareness you need to have of how the little things can impact you. You also need to understand that what you've always done isn't always going to work. I think we've used this before, like the difference between, like, let's say you were trying to increase your bench press and you're the newbie, right? And you got the newbie gains going on right now. And so the difference in your training program from going from like a 100 pound bench press to a 200 pound bench press is going to look and feel way different than the guy who's trying to take his bench press from 400 to 500 pounds.
Yeah.
Right. Way different. Mm-hmm. Because to get to the 400 pounds, you've gone through a ton of adaptation over time. And the goal there is to constantly give your body what it needs to adapt favorably to the training stimulus and avoid injury, right? And put you in a position to reap the rewards of the work that you're putting in. There's a lot of complexity to that. At the beginning, right? It's really hard to fuck that up,
yeah.
Right? Just going to the gym, getting under the bar, the dumbbells or whatever, and pushing under the bench press, you know, sort of example, just doing that consistently and doing work and adding more work over time because you're getting these gains, that is more muscle recruitment, a metabolic adaptation, your energy systems are working better for you, right? You're also, you're building skill, all of that stuff. Like, again, almost hard to mess that up. You just keep doing the same thing, even if you only use the same exercise, right? The same barbell bench press. Like if you just did that even three times a week, you're probably going to, you're going to make up that 100 pounds pretty quick. But as you get to the end of that, like we were talking, like again, the guy that wants to go from 400 to 500 pounds, it's much different. You can't just keep going in there and doing the barbell bench press and expect that you're going to be able to push more and more and more and more. It doesn't work like that. There's some principles there you need to understand. So should you get used to this? No, you don't have to get used to it in terms of the rate at which the change happens. That's something I think that's related more to patience than anything else. Yeah.
Well, and I, you know, I think, you know, depending who this person is, someone who is, you know, they think they're doing all these things correctly, right? They've been doing this for a long time. And to be said, they're probably doing a lot more than that newbie who they're controlling, right? Mm-hmm. They're saying their nutrition, their sleep, all these different things are dialed in. But from there, if you're really wanting to continue, like let's say the person trying to get from the 4 to 5, that's where you have to, we just mentioned, get really dialed in with controlling these variables. Are you playing with different tempos? Are you playing with different intentions, different modalities? Like again, saying like that's the goal, the bench goal, that might be the thing to do. That you're controlling these other variables that everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to the gym 4 days a week. I've been really consistent. But what do those 4 days a week really look like? What are your intentions? Are you treating them like a skill, different things like that. Those are the variables you need to start looking at more and more and more that a lot of people don't even understand the intention of how you're doing these exercises over time.
Yeah, and the recovery might take a little bit longer too. Yes. So instead of doing 3 days a week of bench press, I mean, it might be once every, I don't know, 5 days or something like that.
It could be depending on who you are and what your training program has looked like. I think the biggest trap people fall into is the intensity versus volume trap. And that is, you know, they just keep pushing more loads and it's just work harder. I just need to be working harder than the next guy. I just need to push more weight and keep doing that as if that's the answer to everything, because you'll quickly find the end of that, especially if you're that dude that's trying to move from 400 to 500 pounds on the bench press. That is just not going to work. You will find the end of that versus the volume thing. So tips would be like, take a look at your training program and how you have it lined out. We've talked about this several times on the show, just like, how do you have your training split organized, and how often are you hitting, if you're trying to get more fit, like we just said this a minute ago, but consistency is key.
Yes.
Like, and so, but you can't dump everything into like 3 days a week and expect that even with volume and controlling that intensity, that you're going to keep making gains. It's just going to slow down and you're going to reach this power curve that's going to dissipate on the other end. You can't keep doing that. So like spreading your workouts out and doing the volume that you're supposed to be doing in terms of total number of exercises, right? Over, you know, 2 days a week versus trying to just do it one and rest 7 days and do it again. So the old school bro split where, you know, on Monday it's chest and tries. Yeah. You know, we might be working our chest on Monday and Thursday, right? So we're doing it two times a week. We're maybe doing the same amount of work, right? Volume, but we're able to put more intensity, spreading it across 2 days, which, you know, on a, for a shorter duration of time, so that we're not overdoing it and things like that. We talked about this again. There was a, we did a whole podcast on managing volume and intensity and kind of walk through this process. But as far as a tip goes, I would have a look at your workout program and like, what am I doing with regard to volume? The first thing I would look at is how much work am I doing and how much time am I taking to do that amount of work in. And sometimes, again, it feels like less, but at the end, it's total tonnage. Like how much work, how much weight, you know, in this case, loading, did you actually do over your longer term? This would include, I think in the question, it was about, there was something about running, you know, 3 days a week. The same thing works there, right? With regard to how do you, you know, in terms of being the fit, this is the guy that this was the fittest he's ever been, right? He's been lifting 4 days a week.
But didn't say anything about running.
No?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
No. Okay.
So it would be the same thing like on your running plan. Like you can only do so much in so many days. So what are you doing? Maybe some days are longer runs. Maybe some days are shorter runs, tempo runs. But in this case with the lifting, you know, some days are going to be heavier, more intense days. Some days are going to be more like auxiliary days where we're working a little bit more volume, a little less intensity, even within that same workout week or, microcycle, if we wanted to term it that. So I think that's a tip that people, you know, that take a look at the volume that you're doing and how you're spreading your training out over time. The other part would be like your exercise selection, I think, is really important here as you start to get more advanced. We've talked about like the difference between movements and exercises are being assigned to movement patterns and people are calling exercises things. And that's what they just, that's all they know about it. Well, think about that. As you get more advanced, you're going to have, you should have a much larger library of things that you kind of dip into to challenge your body in different ways. So I think when you're younger, let's not overcomplicate this thing. When I say younger, just a younger training age, you could, again, get jacked, get gains off of maybe 4 to 8 exercises or something like that, you know, like for your chest in your first 2 years, mm-hmm. you know, or first year and a half or whatever that you're doing this stuff. I mean, how many do you really need? You know, you got the barbell bench press, you know, flat bench, then you got the, you know, the dumbbell bench press flat and inclined, and then you have a machine or two that you use, right? You're going to get, and maybe there's a fly in there again. So it's like 4 to 8, you know, kind of exercise, and you just kind of rotate those through in different combinations. You're going to continue to get gains. As you get further down the line, it might change, right? Where you can't do bench press and, you know, just bench pressing all the time in order to build. There are other things you're going to need to build that chest strength or the chest and chest musculature or whatever else. It might get up to as many as like 20 exercises. And I don't think that's a stretch, right? There's maybe some more advanced techniques you can use within those exercises, and to call them 20 different exercises, again, when it's the same basic movement pattern, that's where I was going.
It's a horizontal push.
It's you're pushing or you're doing some type of horizontal shoulder reduction.
Yeah.
The point of this is it gets a little bit more advanced. It gets a little bit more particular. So again, maybe take a look at the exercises that you're using, maybe things that you've married yourself to as the answer for building strength, fitness, however you're defining that, and look to doing things that might to you seem a little bit less conventional, right? Or more that they're not the standard things. And that might be, again, going back to like isolation of things. We've talked about this on the show before, like maybe it is a machine and you've stayed away from machines, right? Because you heard they were bad, right? And that they, you know, they limited range of motion and they were, you know, they forced you into a plane of motion that your body wasn't natural for your body or whatever else. I call bullshit, right? There are risks to that, particularly when you're new, right? But as you're getting on in your training age, those things are incredibly valuable. You can load the shit out of them, right? And you have
stability and everything.
All of that to where you can really overload yourself. So maybe go explore. Another tip would be go explore different quote unquote exercises to hit the same movement patterns that you know you need to do. And there's only so many you can do, right? We're pushing, we're pulling.
Yeah.
You know, we're squatting, we're hinging, you know, we're extending, you know, we're doing some dumbbell curls and there's some rotation in there, right?
Yeah.
Find the different things, you know, there and explore some different some different exercises, give your body a slightly different stimulus. And don't trip out about, well, this doesn't give me, you know, this resistance profile through a full range of motion. And so it's a bad machine or a bad exercise. Again, bullshit. When you get to that level, then you can really work hard at the range or during the resistance profile that maybe a specific exercise or machine does give you and derive benefit from that versus the newbie where we need to be working things through a fuller range of motion and not working limited ranges and to build skill, joint integrity, tissue integrity, all of that stuff and impact the system the way we're trying to impact it to get the gains, but also sets ourselves up, for what I'm talking about now, which is when all those little things start to come into play, like partial reps. You mentioned tempos, different loading schemes, pyramid sets, supersets.
Cluster sets,
all of that stuff starts to become part of the deal. Yeah, and the timing that you get your workouts done in changes as well. Like, when are you concentrating the majority of the hard work, the intensity work? How long is this taking you? You know, to get done, like majority of the shit should probably be done about the first 20 minutes you're into
fresh,
it. Yeah. While you're fresh, because it's going to start to dip off.
Yeah.
You know, so things like that to be aware of. So to answer the question specifically, no, you shouldn't be, you know, feel like you have to get used to this.
Yeah.
The patience piece, you might have to, you know, you might have to put your patience pants on, as CC would tell me a little bit here in terms of what's the rate of return. You might not see him the same. You've been at this, I think the number was
seven years.
That's a long time. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Right. So the rate of return might diminish a little bit, but the compound interest that you can get from the little things that you put in can be huge.
Next question. I'm going into a 4-week mini cut with my diet with the goal of dropping 10 pounds. What tips do you have for making this as successful as possible?
The old mini cut.
Mm-hmm. 4 weeks, 10 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things that popped right out to me right there when I was reading that. Okay, mini cuts versus mini bulks. We hear this bulk cut stuff. Like, what does this really mean? The first thing is like, first off, a mini cut for 4 weeks. To me, that doesn't sound like a mini cut. The second thing is to expect a 10-pound weight loss in 4 weeks.
That sounds miserable.
To me, that sounds like a lot of weight. It's not that it couldn't be done.
Yeah.
Right. But that, well, number one, it doesn't sound like a mini cut. Number two, 10 pounds in that amount of time is a significant amount of weight. And again, not that it can't be done, but if we're truly trying to lose weight or body fat, which is why you would do a mini cut. Like, I don't know. If the goal is to lose water weight, why even call it that?
Yeah.
You know, just dehydrate yourself. But you won't be doing that for 4 weeks. So what's the return on investment there? So anyways, I think there's a few things to unpack here.
Well, I would hope kind of you're reassessing with this person of if you're really thinking of doing a 4-week mini cut, I would hope or assume that this is because there's a very specific reason, right? Where someone's like, oh, I'm going on this trip to Hawaii and I want to look my best. But if you're just doing a 4-week mini cut just because you think it's a good idea to do a 4-week mini cut, it's not a good idea. You're not going to really get the benefit from that cutting phase. So one, reassess, does it need to just be 4 weeks or can you actually lengthen it out? Can you plan a little bit more? Like, we were talking with a client who had some goals about getting really shredded. And she was talking about this very short range, this short time frame, like for this summer and all how she wanted to look, all this stuff. And we were talking more of this like year plan of like, what is this going to look like over the long haul. So that's one thing. Reassess, does it need to be a 4-week mini cut? Did you see this because you think this is like a you know, people are preaching this, that this is a your whatever, 4-week challenge, mini cut, whatever you want to call it. Is that really what you want to be doing, should be doing to get you to whatever that goal is? Once you find that answer, if the goal is like, okay, I know it might not be the best. I think I want to cut to, again, look good for this thing, this trip in 4 weeks. I mean, truthfully, just do a lot of the basics that we talk about, you know, make sure you're managing your movement, make sure you're managing, obviously managing your nutrition, things like that. This is where, again, we wouldn't push to do 10 pounds in a month, but you can start to leverage like cardio, things like that in addition to that. But again, I think the main answer is reassess is why are you doing a 4-week mini cut?
Yeah. I would just look at it and go, 4 weeks is not a mini cut to me. It's way longer. I just kind of like define what bulks and cuts, you know, are. A bulk basically is in your surplus and your goal there is to gain muscle without gaining too much fat or if no fat at all.
Yeah.
Like the ideally is we're building muscle and we're not building any fat, right? The ultimate would be we're actually building muscle during our bulk and losing fat.
Yes.
So we're actually getting leaner. And the cut would be we're working in a deficit where the goal is to bring down body fat without losing any lean tissue, right? And so those two are very specific things with a very specific, we're looking for some very specific outcomes. And if all you're doing is measuring the weight on the scale, you're already you need to get in a better headspace about this.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, and when I look at like bulks versus cuts, like what does that mean? What are the things that you need to know? Well, first off, this is going to be, we just talked about being in a deficit. Well, to be in a deficit, you also have to understand like what is your totally daily energy expenditure? Mm-hmm. What is your TDEE? And so what is your baseline, right? Like for what you need to maintain. So that takes a little work. You have to do a little understanding. Super easy to figure out this number. Go to rdfguides.com and we have a free guide there for how to calculate this. And it's like, oh God, I got to do math. If you're doing quote unquote cuts and bulks mm-hmm. without having some level of awareness specific to the math at some point in your journey, then all you're doing is throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. And that might work once, maybe it works twice, but it's not a good long-term strategy. So I'm just putting that out there. But a bulk would be, let's say, somewhere between the neighborhood of like 300 on the low side, maybe to as many as, I don't know, like 800 on the high side in terms of a surplus. Mm-hmm. That's going to be very dependent on the individual and what they're willing to put into it, how much, what their current total daily energy expenditure is. I mean, if your TDEE is 1500 calories, right? And you're eating right now somewhere around that 14 to maybe 16 a day, you're kind of hovering and you threw 800 calories on top of that, expect to gain some body fat, right?
Yeah.
And have a really full gut.
GI issues. Yeah. Yeah,
like, so I think like on average, it might be like 500 calories or whatever, say 300 to 500 conservatively. And then on the deficit side, I would say it's the same, but it is going to be dependent on what your kind of your start point is or what your need is and where you're currently eating. So, or your intaking. So if we're looking at this, you know, how would I organize this? Well, first off, I've already said it. I was really upfront about this. Like a 4 week cut is not a mini cut to me. You are on a deficit for quite a long time and you should expect there's going to be a significant amount of metabolic adaptation there, which is going to stop at some point with regard to the ideal result, which would be to lose body fat without losing muscle mass and or performance or your ability to maintain the muscle mass. What I mean by that is you don't have the energy, you don't have the nutrients in order to power your workouts as well as recover from those. So I would look at it more from like, okay, how do we structure this? First off, I would ask, are you coming off a bulk? So are you coming off a surplus? Because if you're currently eating at your maintenance, right? And you're just going to drop down for 4 weeks, well, then you should expect those results are going to be very limited. You know, if you could drop some weight. I would expect that to happen. But how and for how much and for how long? So that's one thing to consider. So are you coming off of a bulk? And how long has that bulk been going on for, right? How long have you been in a surplus for? So if I was going to organize it, the way I like to look at this is like the bulk's more important than the cut to me, but the cuts are important because you cannot stay in a deficit for too long without some more detrimental effects. The detrimental effect on the staying in the bulk for too long is the gaining of body fat, right? And that is a good indication of like, you've been on it long enough, mm-hmm. right? Like I've been on this bulk for a while and now my gains are continuing from a muscle perspective or strength perspective, but man, I'm getting fat. How do you know that? I don't know. Do an in-body, do a body composition, you know, assessment or something like that. That's one way to measure that. But the other way is like, you can see it in the mirror, mm-hmm. you know, if you've been doing this a while. So I do that. And I'm going to say it's going to be like a ratio of like 2-1 to maybe 3-1 bulk to cut in terms of timing. Mm. So if I'm on a bulk for 2 weeks, you know, I might cut for 1 week and then go right back to my bulk. So what we're really, when I say bulk and cut, we're talking about a surplus to a deficit, right? Surplus to a deficit, surplus to a deficit. You know, in terms of that mini cut, maybe as long as 10 days, 2 weeks would be a stretch for me if I'm trying to get back into the bulk, but it depends on the person and what they're doing, what their experience level is like, and are they really managing their caloric intake and macro stuff. But I would have a look at like 4 weeks. Why? Because you could effectively get through two bulk cycles, right? And a cut cycle or a portion of each in that 4 week period. So you're going back, like, reevaluate, what are we really doing here? What do we really want to be ready for?
Yeah.
And why are we really doing this? How much work could we get done in some shorter cycles?
Yeah.
And so again, the idea with the bulks and the cuts is like, if you can be bulking while also losing body fat, dude, you're killing it.
Then why change what you're doing?
Yeah, why change what you're doing? And then, you know, again, like, if that's what's happening, it doesn't mean, and you're still gaining, it doesn't mean you can't go into a cut to maybe pull off a little bit more body fat. But I wouldn't stay there for very long, right? Unless you want to slow down the gains that you're getting, right? Then that's up to you. Like, if you want to take that quote unquote risk, if you want, you could do that. But my advice in terms of tips would be, think about your timing. I wouldn't do it for 4 weeks. Not that you can't, and not that you can't get some benefit from that, but I would shorten that time period. And starting with the base knowledge of like, where am I now? What does my surplus versus my deficit really look like? And then plan out, you know, from there. I think that's the starting point. But you made some really good points there, Ryan, about like, hey, where is my head with this whole thing?
Yeah.
What am I really trying to do? I think one of the cool things about the bulk and cut cycle, if you get your arms around this, is you can just keep doing this.
Yeah.
I was just having this conversation with, gosh, I forget who it was. Forget who I was talking to, but they were talking about how much success they had with this, about like, hey, they were ramping up, right? And they'd do that for like as much as a month. And then they would do, and this is a bodybuilder dude.
Yeah.
So he would ramp up for a month and he'd do a week into a deficit. And then he'd go right back to his bulk. And for a long period of time, for like three of those cycles in a row, he was actually leaning up as he was going. Mm-hmm. So why is that happening? There's quite a few reasons. I mean, there's some hormonal stuff that's going on there. There's also, you know, some things that are going on with your metabolism, in a sense, if you want to look at it kind of like an engine here. As you're bulking up, you're speeding up that metabolism. You're giving your body work to do, right? And you're kind of revving it up. And then when you go into a deficit, you know, the first couple of days into a deficit, you're going to still be revved up and your body now has less to work with. Ideally, what you're looking at is like, hopefully it's burning that body fat for stored fuel. And then again, as that continues to happen, you're revving it up. You're working into that cut at a rev state, right? You're drawing from that stored body fat. And that's how that process happens. The trap is going from the bulk to the cut and then adding a bunch more activity in. Mm-hmm. So if we like you, they think like, okay, I'm going to a cut. So here comes the cardio.
Yeah.
And we go out and start running every day. All right. Well, you need to manage those calories. First off, that's unnecessary.
Yeah.
If you've got things dialed in, you could, again, be getting leaner while eating more without doing a lick of cardio, if that's not what you want to do. We always encourage people to do this, to do cardio anyways, but like to just add it in for the sake of speeding up your cut, not a good idea. I think that would be a piece of advice that I would give somebody as well.
My shoulder mobility sucks, period. I know it's a problem and I know it limits me, but I'm not going to dedicate a ton of time that I already struggle to find in order to do a bunch of rehab exercises to fix this. If there was one or two things I could do each workout that could make a difference without taking away time from what I'm already doing, what would that be?
I love this question.
I'd say first go listen to our episode on shoulder health and shoulder mobility.
Yeah, we've talked about this several times, but I love this question. I think it's really very relatable.
Yeah.
And I think this is the majority of people, like they know they have issues.
Yeah.
But they're also like, man, I'm here to work out today. Mm-hmm. Like this makes me feel good when I do work out. I can work around what little pain or discomfort I might be having or whatever. And it's not enough to make me take away from that other stuff in order to spend time, you know, trying to fix something that to me, like it probably should be fixed, but it's not time to fix it yet.
Yeah.
You know? That's a thing. So I think people can relate to this.
I think on the two sides of this, there's one, modify to work around, to work what you can, like you're just saying, work around what you can. So maybe it's changing the range of motion. We've talked a lot about this. Like if you can't quite get overhead, maybe you're working at a higher incline press for something like that, for your overhead pushing, things like that. But then I was even talking, there's with a client today about having the intention of your exercises change to where the goal of the exercise now is to work on increased range of motion, or work on whether your control, your intention, or an exercise that maybe challenges it in a safe way as well. I could think of a million different exercises that create length. You know, I had a client working in a supinated pull down. So it's where we're in a palms up pull down. And when you really milk the stretch on this, because your lat is an internal rotator, when you're maintaining external rotation in the stretch, you're getting a deeper opening of the lat, which can be part of the tissue that limits overhead mobility and things like that. So having that, okay, what's the programming look like, including exercises that maybe challenge this under strength and length, or length and strength, that also challenge that. So you're not just sitting there having to stretch your lat or do all these corrective exercises day in or day out. So yeah, things like that.
Yeah. I think the first thing I would say to somebody is like, learn how to pull and push correctly.
Yes.
Because I think that is the biggest limiter for most people, mm-hmm. is that they're just not doing things as effectively or as efficiently as they could be, which is creating some level of overcompensation or mm-hmm. weakness in other areas as a result. And that's where we are. So
I would agree.
Yeah. So you just mentioned, and again, this is like, if you go back and listen to the shoulder mobility yeah. exercise or episode or whatever, you're going to hear us talking a little bit more deeply about that. But learn, when you are particularly on your push and pull days, mm-hmm. make sure or do your best, however you can possibly do that, to learn how and execute properly the skills around pushing and pulling. So whether that's vertically, horizontally, any other plane in between, like what are we doing in order to achieve the best shoulder mechanics we possibly can, despite whatever limitations you may be faced with right now? And so that's going to be different things for different people. So that would be the first thing I would say, is learn how to push and pull properly. And you just mentioned like, well, what does that, you know, if somebody asks like, what does that mean? Well, part of it is like, change some very basic things within the movements that you're doing. Yeah. So everybody's familiar with that overhand pull down. Everybody does those, whether yeah. it's a pull up or a pull down.
Yes.
You're going, go more to like what would be considered like a chin up on the pull down bar,
yeah.
which is the supinated like palms up type of work. While you are still going to get to train your back today, yeah. right? You're still doing your lat pull down, but you are emphasizing things in a different way. And if you can switch your head on to try to drive more of a connection to what your shoulders, right, quote unquote back, right, and all the things that are connected to that, arms, hands, and now bar and weight stack, what that's doing, you could be doing yourself a huge favor there in terms of bettering shoulder mechanics, which could then in turn improve shoulder mobility. Mm-hmm. Grip positions,
yes.
is one thing that can happen when we just go back to the pushing and pulling correctly. That's one thing. So
angles of pull, right?
What's yeah. that?
Your angles.
Pull. Yeah. So again, you got vertical and horizontal. You got everything in between.
Yep.
Yeah. There's machines in the gym that may be helpful for this at some level to help you really isolate certain ranges or planes that you might be wanting to pull. So if you have access to that stuff, you can. Without spending a bunch of time doing all these, you know, mobility exercises and what you might consider funky stuff or like yeah. stuff that we talk about going, dude, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. Like I've been there. Like I only have so much time in the gym to get this stuff done. I have all this density of work that I have to do as far on top of the volume through the work, like taking half an hour, right, to go do this stuff is just not likely. However, there are some things you can do there. And we've talked about these on the show before. Like if you really wanted to hit just priming those areas before you get like priming the shoulder girdle for pushing, pulling, rotation, abduction, adduction, those kind of things. There are things that you can be doing pre-workout and then things that you can follow up sort of at the end of the workout to kind of reinforce those things to maybe help your situation, which don't take a lot of time. Most people are probably doing some kind of a warm up,
yeah.
right? If you've been working out for a long time, right, you're doing some type of warm up, whether that's just a lighter load of the actual exercise you're going to be or movement you're going to be doing, or you're doing something else. And hopefully it's not going over to the plate rack, grabbing a 10 pound plate and swinging it around in a circle and expecting that to be your warm up. Like if you're doing that, here's a great place to start. Stop doing that shit.
Or grabbing a dumbbell and trying to warm up your rotator cuff.
Yeah, fuck. Yeah, scanning.
Internal, external rotation.
Just sitting doing it right here.
Yeah, where you look like the waving cat at the sushi bar.
Yes.
Right? Like, stop doing that shit. Replace that with some other things.
And for most people, we've talked about this too, is like you don't really need to spend so much. If your shoulder mobility sucks, it's not just a rotator cuff issue. It's a mechanic issue. So maybe doing things that are more comprehensive, warming up your whole kinetic chain of your back moving, your shoulder blade, your scapula moving, those different things, not just going and, oh, I do my little rotator cuff thing and then, I don't know, my shoulder mobility sucks. So that still irks me a lot. So.
Yeah. The last thing I would add here is just intention. Mm-hmm. And that is like, if you know it, if you know that already and you are being, you coming in with kind of a negative attitude towards it or just kind of like, yeah, fuck this, you know, kind of thing. Well, guess what? The inputs are going to equal the outputs. Mm-hmm. So coming with a better attitude or a better approach to it, just a better mindset to like, I know this sucks and my mobility sucks here and I could be doing better. The word that we use so often that I think people miss a lot of times is just the intention. Like when I am doing something, making that connection, right? For somebody that's new, this could be very hard, right? To do that. But for somebody that's been doing this for a while and also knows they have poor shoulder mobility, this just takes you really focusing during the time that you're working out or the times that you're doing. So that takes no additional time. That just takes extra effort. And so when people are asking like, is there one or two things I can do? If somebody is already giving me pushback on like, dude, I don't want to have to think like that. I just want to get through my workout. Then I can't fucking help you.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do for you. No, there's no tips. There's no nothing beyond that. Because even if I was able to give you the magic exercise and the magic mobility movement, if you can't enter it with that type of a mindset, it ain't going to do anything for you anyway, Jack.
Regardless of what any of these exercises is, and you just said it a lot, is the intention. So if you're just going through the motion, whether it's a rehab corrective, whether it's your exercises, whatever, if you're just going through the motions, you are not going to get a good effect and you're going to keep running into these issues.
You know, something I'm thinking of as far as, you know, talking about intention, when what exercise is bothering you when you're talking about your shoulder mobility sucks and you are having shoulder pain?
Like, how are you assessing this?
Yeah. So is it during a barbell bench press? Is it a flat bench press? Is it an incline? Is it an overhead press? Well, you know what? Then don't do the barbell. Try using some dumbbells. Try using a machine. Change up your apparatus to see if that makes any difference when you're doing it. You know, some other things would be, maybe try single arm types of exercises instead of doing both arms at the same time bilateral. Maybe try a single arm dumbbell bench press and see if that helps to reduce any of the discomfort that you're experiencing. And then also play with your elbow angle as far as when you're laying back on the bench, you know, is your elbow straight out to the side or maybe drop it down a little bit towards your torso when you're doing your bench press. I mean, there's a lot of different things that you can try doing to decrease the symptoms that you're having. And then if that works for you, then work on your range of motion, work with your intention, slow your tempo down, really think about what you're doing and the movement pattern. And if that helps, then hey, you know what? That's a win.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the, you know, whether it's you, like you're having an issue or you just recognize like my mobility isn't good. Mm-hmm. Like either way, to your point, like there's things that you can do where you can get a clue as to where your issue is. You don't have to be an expert at this or a pro. So, you know, you're changing positions, trying a different exercise. And again, if you're coming into the mindset like, dude, I don't want to lose my gains or I don't want to do that. Like a single arm bench press or a single dumbbell press. Like, I don't want to do that. Well, I can, man. Like, I can't help you. If you're married to an exercise and you're looking for that one or two things, and I'm saying, well, maybe change the exercise that you're doing change the movement pattern, which may give you a greater range of motion, which might help you with a little bit more stability, which might then help you with a little bit more mobility in the end. Like, if you're pushing back on things like that, then you're asking the wrong question because we can't help you with this. But again, going back is learn how to push and pull better.
Yes.
be better there and have, you know, a better connection and an intention for those types of movements or any type of movement for that matter when you're out there on the workout floor. And generally speaking, you know, that can make a massive difference in a very short period of time, shy of doing a bunch of very specific things, which could also give you great benefit, but also are time consuming and may take you out of your regular game. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Iron Sights. If you enjoyed our conversation, you can support our mission by hitting the subscribe button, leaving a review, and sharing the podcast with a friend. I'll see you on the next episode.